Hello there. This is part two of our conversation with Boris. In part one, we were talking about tasting herbs and identifying the actions based on their nature and flavor. In this session, we switch over to talking about topical application of herbs. Boris is one of the founders of Dragon Blood Balm, so here he gives us his insights into working with various liniments and balms and the actions of various herbs when applied topically. And we also talk about Dragon Blood Balm versus Evil Bone Water, how they're different and how they can be used together. So Boris, let's talk about topical application of herbs.
Sure. So let me switch from doujong to beer. I picked this up today. It's Christmas time, so I wanted something dark. Today's actually first day of Hanukkah, but cheers. Oh, this porter hits nice after all that herby stuff.
So what about topical herbs? Can we do the same thing topically and externally taste our herbs, or how do we know the functions there?
Well, you know, I don't know if we can just put an herb on our skin and necessarily know right away what it does. However, there are certain herbs you put on your skin you feel right away, like bohe nao or zhang nao, bing pian. They're going to have an effect right away. Hua jiao. I know you were commenting on each herb. Do you want to?
No, well, I got comments recently that sometimes I mention things in Chinese and people can't understand what I'm saying. They're like, oh, can you put subtitles on there? Because you say those Chinese names real fast. I don't actually know what you're talking about. But
gotcha.
But we're talking about like menthol and camphor and stuff like that. Yeah, when you put that stuff on your skin, you feel the tingle right away.
Yeah, you feel the tingle. I mean, cinnamon, it'll give a bit of a burn. I don't know if... I give this example a lot, and nobody knows what I'm talking about. So hopefully someone out there listening, has anyone ever licked a big red wrapper and stuck it on their forehead as a kid? Or was this only people in my neighborhood in Brooklyn?
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever done that.
All right. Well, I'm a weirdo. Anyway, it burns. A cinnamon wood.
Yeah. No. I remember somebody saying that when we were talking about Posamon, which I think has a lot of cinnamon mm-hmm. in it. He said his sisters would get it on their hands and then try to like stab him in the eyes with it and try to make his eyes burn. I think that's the closest I've got.
No, I wouldn't do this. It was like, you know, it was like eating a warhead candy. It's like, how much suffering can you inflict on yourself with candy?
Oh okay.
Anyway.
So, but forehead application of cinnamon, you can feel that.
You can absolutely feel that it burns. So I think to an extent, we can definitely feel certain herbs on the skin, and those are the ones that are probably the most frequently used. However, when we taste the herb, we can still extrapolate its function. So when we use a topical herb, we're still using it, considering that if we're using Dongguai topically, that it's going to move the blood. So when we taste it and it tastes like it's going to move the blood, we can consider that it might work that way topically. So I haven't formed a concrete opinion as to when can an herb be used topically. Theoretically, you know, any blood-moving herb should be able to be used topically, but through empirical evidence, through experience, through the records we have, and through formula we've seen, we see that some are better than others. So we use the ones that are better than others just because that's what tradition tells us, and, you know, sometimes it's better not to mess with things, especially if they work well. If we were having trouble, then we can experiment more. So the most important thing, though, topical should work. If they don't work, if you think maybe they kind of work, then they probably don't work.
And I guess one of the things I have trouble with is how do we necessarily differentiate them? Because I feel like when I was in school, we had this big tray of – we had Posamon, white flower oil, Ditdejiao, Junggu Shui, woodlock oil. And nobody could ever quite explain what the difference was. Sometimes I go look up formulas for Ditdejiao, and it's like there might be some recipe with like 100 different ingredients in it. It's like they just threw the whole kitchen sink in there. Is there a way to differentiate these in terms of what they do? How deeply do they penetrate? Like, how do we navigate that?
So, I mean, I can really only speak from my experience. And even though I make topicals, I make Dragon Blood Balm, some variations of it. I can't say that I'm by any means like a master expert on all of the topicals. But I think we do have to look at the nature and flavor of the thing that we're using. So the easiest one is to differentiate as a hot formula or a cold formula. And white flower oil is cold, and it literally, I think, only has menthol and maybe one or two other ingredients in it. So it's cold as cold can be. Whereas, I don't know if you've ever seen Taoist oil.
No, I haven't.
It's really hot. Like literally you took two or three drops of it, and that's the whole thing, like for a whole knee. It's really, really hot, and it burns, and it feels like peppers on your skin. So, I mean, it's really easy when it's like that to differentiate that. So you use the hot one for cold conditions and the cold one for hot conditions. But your question is really good because I have been struggling with that as I've been working on Dragon Blood Balm and trying to really fine-tune it, and as I was coming up with the original formula and how I use it in the clinic and how do I sell it to my patients and feel good about it and being like, okay, this is the thing that's appropriate for this condition. We have to look at what do most of the herbs do typically. So typically, most of the herbs in these formulas move. They move qi, they move blood. And that's why there's so much overlap, because when you move qi and blood, healing happens. You don't need to only use one type of herb versus another type of herb. I think, you know, when you throw a kitchen sink in alcohol and soak it, it's not necessarily going to be better than another thing. I think that typically comes from when people don't really understand the individual herbs and they just want to cover all their bases, and that's probably fine. A lot of the Dita formulas aren't coming from like Zhang Zhongjing sitting with a long beard and being like, I want five herbs to create this kind of movement with a little bit of this and a little bit of that and then a pivot in the middle. No, it's martial artists who've been like punching things and they're like, my hands hurt. I need something to stick them in.
Yeah, it's like what do we got in the backyard right now that we can throw in there?
It's like, we got some cinnamon, some scorpions under a rock, and some iron filings. Let's throw it all in some alcohol and soak it. Probably shouldn't drink it. I'm being a little facetious, but that's my kind of understanding of when a formula has so many ingredients, especially topically, because it's hard to know exactly what's going to get absorbed. But a lot of them are really important, though, because when we see the topicals with all the bugs in them, those are really important when there's like really bad bone bruises, when there's like nerve damage, when things really need to heal, not for like a sprain or a strain, some kind of typical overuse injury, but those are going to be great.
But
for,
like, deep in there
and severe. So actually, the Nugent heads were telling us a case study about this woman who had really severe scleroderma. And I'm not going to go into the history of it, but part of the treatment was that they had their teacher actually had her take baths of topical herbs, and there were like, you know, bugs in there, like scorpions and these really things that get things moving. And scleroderma is this condition where the skin is like literally hardening and becoming like immobile, and it can't move. So in those cases, you really need the herbs that are going to be able to penetrate deep and create lots of movements. So, you know, I'm not going to go, it's not my case study to share, but the patient did get a lot better. And she was kind of forsaken by doctors saying that nothing can be happening. Anyway, so those are like, when we see those kinds of herbs in a formula, we can think, okay, this is intended for severe conditions, for bone breaks, not for like, I overworked out and I overstretched something. Posamon is interesting because I think it's a warming formula, but there's so much menthol in it, it kind of distracts you. So, but the menthol is interesting because I don't think it penetrates super deep. It kind of makes the skin really cold, but if the other herbs are able to get in and warm the tissues, it's cooling on the surface to kind of numb things and then creating warmth below. And I think that's why everything has menthol, and that's why it can get a little bit confusing. And I'm not an expert on evil bone water or jungle shui, but if we look at those herbs, a lot of them really focus on blood and damp transformation. And there are fewer herbs in higher doses, so they're more pinpoint. So like Baijiu is very, very aromatic. I mean, if you drink it, it's like super light and misty, and it just goes up to the nose. But we can imagine if you apply that, it's going to do something similar. So those oils are going to get in there and create movement up and out. So it's going to open up so that everything else can go in, and the menthol and the camphor also kind of open things and cool and stop pain right away, but they also help other things to penetrate. I don't know if you've seen, I think it's called black ghost oil. It has turpentine, and turpentine helps to guide herbs quite deeply because turpentine penetrates very deeply. I was actually working on a dragon blood balm variant with turpentine, but couldn't find sourcing that's affordable enough where I could produce it and not charge like crazy amounts of money. And people get weird about that. They hear turpentine, like, oh, I don't want to put paint thinner on me.
Yeah.
But natural turpentine is really good. If we call it pine oil, it sounds much less innocuous. But I think that's an important way to just differentiate is look at the flavors and the temperatures of the herbs in the formulas, and that'll tell you what they do. And if they're really similar, that's because, you know, cinnamon is not the only warm herb. Ginger is not the only warm herb. Like the writers of those formulas want to warm and create movement. They don't want to use scorpions. They don't want to use futsa. They want to warm and create movement. And so they just find herbs that do that. So a lot of like the Dita formulas and the bone break formulas, they'll use like, they'll find the hottest, most moving herbs and they'll use them. So like Chuan Wu or Cao Wu, and these are all very like parts of futsa for the people who don't know the specific herbs.
Yeah, yeah, the different aconite plants. Yeah,
and that's why they'll use them. Yeah. Well, that's why, for example, Evil Bone Water doesn't have those, because Evil Bone Water is fantastic to just keep in your pocket for anything. Because it doesn't have any of those toxic herbs, it creates movement using light acrid herbs, and it creates movement using blood-moving herbs like Sanchi. So it's great for a variety of things. Maybe it's not the best thing for like a severe broken bone for like that day one when you need something really like that, but it's like really great for most, like 80 to 90% of things, and it's going to do something good for that bone, for that broken bone, but maybe not something, it doesn't have that, those creepy crawlies and those poisonous herbs.
Yeah, not as good as the scorpions and centipedes that will crawl in there and knit your bones back together. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing to think about there. So, for example, the product I made, Dragon Blood Balm. Go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, the product you make and Mark makes, that I guess that would be an example of how do we differentiate those two? Because you sometimes even sell them together. So if I have both of those on my shelf or both of those that I can sell to a patient, when would I use Evil Bone Water and when would I use Dragon Blood Balm?
So that's a really good question. And I think these two products, almost by accident, have a really great synergy. So I'll first start by saying they don't have almost any overlapping ingredients other than the menthol and the Baijiu. So that's one thing. So they're kind of complementary in that way that they fill in areas that the other one doesn't do. So I've already talked a little bit about Evil Bone Water, but I'll just say briefly that it's really great at stopping pain. It stops pain right away because of a lot of those kind of the camphor, the menthol, the sanchi that work on the surface and move blood. And they also gets in there. It helps to transform damp and it penetrates quite deeply. So it does help with bone bruises and it's great for fractures. It's just, you know, there are sometimes better things, but if you're only going to have one thing, it's a fantastic one to use. Dragon Blood Balm was created to work more on the superficial aspects of things. And I originally created it for rock climbers. Well, I originally created it for myself because I was, I think, still in acupuncture school or just finished acupuncture school, starting herbal medicine school. Because I split it up because I did acupuncture and massage first, and then I went back to do herbs. And I had enough herbal knowledge to be able to come up with this formula. And I started rock climbing. And, you know, the first time I went rock climbing, I was in Korea at the time. After I'd finished acupuncture school, I went to Korea for a month to do stuff. And the first time I rock climbed, I couldn't hold chopsticks for like a week. So I was like eating with my left hand, using a spoon. It was the only thing I could use.
I guess, was that like was the surface ripped up or was it just like a grip strength thing? Because I feel like I've had both of those happen.
So both. Literally, I had no skin on three of my fingers here and here. I guess, you know, I was 24 and really eager and super excited and I was having too much fun and had no skill. So yeah, I couldn't hold chopsticks. My skin was destroyed, but I also had a lot of what's called pump. So essentially all of these muscles were just full of blood and like I could not close my hand more than like that. So I was walking around like with a T-Rex hand here and like this one's kind of also beat up and like eating with a spoon like this. And so that experience made me sort of think like, okay, I really love that. That was so fun. But I obviously cannot hold a tiny needle or touch anybody with this rough skin. So I started working on a formula. And at first I just was using, Eagle Claw Liniment that I found in Tom Vizio's book, Tooth from the Tiger's Mouth, which is fantastic, yeah. Really great book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I remember the day that I was like trying to put it together, it had like things like crab shells in it, and I didn't realize it was crab shells. So I was going to all of the pharmacies and being like, do you have, forget the name of it now, but like I was like, do you have this herb? And they're like, no, we don't carry that. and then finally someone's like, that's a crab shell. We don't carry that. I was like, oh. So I went to the fish market, also in Chinatown, bought a bunch of crabs, cooked them, ate them, took the shells, cleaned them so they wouldn't smell too fishy, roasted them, and then I made this. I actually still have this eagle claw liniment that I made because it was just really stinky. I didn't end up using too much of it.
Oh, yeah.
But it was quite effective. So I was rubbing this in my hands and then putting shunko cream on top. I don't know if you're familiar with shunko cream, also known as purple cloud ointment.
Yeah, I was going to say the Chinese is zhu yun gao. Purple cloud ointment. But that's in Japanese style, they use it as their burn cream when they do mm-hmm. moxa. I think most people should be familiar with that. Even if they haven't used it, you've probably seen it in the clinic, even if you don't know it.
Yeah, it's a really great like heal most skin balm. It's dangui, zicao. Sometimes it's just dangui and zicao. Maybe huangqi.
Yeah, I was going to say, usually I see it's just that, and then maybe like some sesame oil or something.
Yeah, sesame oil and beeswax.
I guess I've never known, is the sesame oil, does that have a medicinal property, or it's just what they had on hand for a medium?
I think sesame oil has a medicinal property. The reason I stopped using sesame oil in Dragon Blood Balm, which we did originally use actually, is because it has a very strong smell. And like already the herbs have a strong smell, so I was trying to find things that maybe... can, like, for example, jojoba has a lot of similar properties. It's less blood nourishing, but it's still pretty good. But it doesn't have, it's pretty neutral.
Yeah, I was going to say some of the burn creams, like the Qinghongwan, it's something when you put that on, it's like you definitely smell like sesame mm-hmm. for the rest of the day.
But it helps to nourish the blood and moisten the skin. It's very good for helping skin to heal. So I would kind of be using these two formulas. And then I decided, well, let me see if I can make my own thing. Because, I mean, frankly, the eagle claw liniment was a little bit stinky, and it also had a lot of toxic herbs. And the thing is, with rock climbing, your skin is constantly open, and I didn't want to keep putting it in there. So I got to work to try to put together a formula that was safe to use on open cuts, but also good for the skin. And, you know, the first iteration looked something like zhuyingao with frankincense, myrrh, dragon blood. So, and all of those herbs, the reason I chose them is because they move blood, move qi, stop pain, and generate flesh.
Yeah.
And are great for non-healing sores. So, like, that's the key of that. It's like zhuyingao plus these three herbs. It's great for any kind of flesh that's not healing. And I played around with adding different herbs to make it penetrate not just on the skin, because obviously, like, my hands are hurting, not just the skin hurts.
Yeah, at a muscular level.
Yeah, the muscular and tendon level. Yeah. The other injury that I was getting was I was starting to get pulley injuries, which is essentially, you can see how this bunch is right here. A pulley is a tendon sheath that goes across these tendons here, and it kind of gets ripped because, you know, you're putting way too much weight on your fingertips.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just kept playing around with the formula to make it penetrate deep enough, but using herbs that are safe for open cuts. And essentially, I came up with Dragon Blood Balm this way because it was something I needed. And actually, I was sitting with my friend after a climbing session, and I was like, hey, you know, try this. And he's like, oh, I like this. My girlfriend liked it. We were sitting having ramen in a bar on the Upper East Side in Manhattan, and he was like, let's make this a business. I was like, this is good. This is going to help some people. And he always wanted to have his own business, and he was excited because, and I don't do marketing. I don't do graphic design, and we're like, all right, let's do this. So like we started brainstorming, and that was 5 years ago already somehow. So anyway, how is it different than evil bone water? So Dragon Blood Balm generates flesh. It's an important thing to remember. It also moves blood and stops pain and is, you know, is great for that kind of thing. But it, like, the big difference there is that it generates flesh, and that's a big emphasis, while moving blood and stopping pain. I use it frequently as a standalone topical herb for painful conditions, and we have plenty of people who use it for joint pain, ankle pain. I have people, like, I have a woman who's a farrier, which is a person who makes horseshoes. Like, she sent us a review saying that, you know, my horse keeps kicking me, and the Dragon Blood Balm is the only thing that keeps me going. And we're like, oh, you know, that feels really good to hear. So, like, getting feedback like that made us like want to keep going with the company. And when I started talking to Mark and using his product, which is an alcohol base, so it actually penetrates deeper than a beeswax based, I was talking to him and I realized they really work well together because you apply an alcohol based topical, like a Dita Jiao or a Zheng Gu Shui or mm-hmm. evil bone water, and then you put that beeswax on top. It sort of seals it in, so it's not evaporating and drying off.
Oh, okay.
It now has a water phobic, hydrophobic, like covering on it. So now it's not going to go up. It's only going to go down. And then it's going to, as it goes in, it's going to bring in the dragon blood bomb itself. So they have this like interplay of a yin and yang thing going. And plus, if you're combining them on areas that are beat up and cut, I find that Jungle Shui, or I mean, actually not Jungle Shui, but Evil Bone Water is safe to use on all sorts of open cuts, even though I don't know if it's officially is or not, but I use it on everything.
I was going to say, I've used it to stop bleed. Like there's so much Sanchi in it. I've actually used it to stop bleeding when I didn't have like a
Styptic like or Yunnan Bio.
Yeah.
And so, but it doesn't, it'll speed up the blood flow and stuff like this. And it'll, because it's the alcohol based, it kills infections and there's some cold herbs in there too. So it'll kill off bacteria, but the dragon blood bomb helps to really get things to knit together. So if you put it in a cut, and put that, like put both, it knits it together. The dragon blood bomb works great on its own, but together they work so well. So like on our website on Dragon Blood Bomb, we're one of the places you can actually buy Evil Bone Water one at a time, not wholesale. We oftentimes sell it packed together with Dragon Blood Bomb, and that's how I use it in my clinic. So in my clinic, I typically don't use either one of them alone anymore. The only time I'll use the dragon blood bomb alone only is if I'm doing massage, and it's really good for that. It's way better than an alcohol-based liniment. Or if I just want to spray something on and I don't want to touch it, then I'll use only the evil bone water. But typically I'm using both at the same time because they work so well together. And most of my patients have both in their purse or bag at all times.
Okay. Oh, so even from a patient perspective, you're using
that's both. How I prescribe it. I tell them do this and this.
Okay. Oh, awesome.
And then I tell them like, you know, if you only want to use one, this is when you use this one. This is when you use this one. And sometimes the dragon blood bomb is great because like we sell it in a tiny thing like this and you only use a little bit at a time. It's great to like put in your pocket or in your purse or anything like this. Whereas evil bone water, it's a bit bigger like this, but it's still flight safe. So it's 3.4 ounces explicitly labeled. So you can put it in your carry-on and no one's going to bother you.
Yeah, because I was trying to think of like what are some other regenerating flesh things I would use it for other than like rock climbing. Because initially I was thinking like I would use it after lifting weights. It's kind of the same thing when you're
you're
deadlifting. You're still, it's the same thing where like you're using a lot of chalk on your hands. You got the, instead of the rough surface of the climbing wall, you got the knurling on there and it tears up your hands in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great use. We had a lot of nurses using it from washing hands too much. I definitely use it. I mean, just when I'm applying it to patients, I'll just make sure to like, if I have like a dry patch, I'm like, oh, let me just apply a little bit on myself as I massage it in.
I was going to say that was an interesting thing that like I guess the modern version would be people washing their hands all the time. I remember my Chinese teacher telling a story about they went on a field trip to plant rice, and it was like when they had their hands in the cold water planting rice, then they got the same like chapped thing. But
for sure.
I guess, yeah, that would be the modern version is people have to wash their hands all the time. They get so dry that they start to crack, and so then you'd want to regenerate flesh.
Yeah. I mean, another place, I'll just give you a couple of more examples. I have a diabetic patient with non-healing sores. She uses that. It helps. I actually use both in combination. But literally, I had a patient. It wasn't the thing that saved her legs, but it was part of the complex of things. And, you know, she came to me with sores in her feet that were down to the bone, and they wanted to amputate, and she didn't want to amputate. And I was like, listen, I will treat you if you're getting monitored by your doctor like weekly. And so she was having a nurse come to her twice a week because I didn't want to miss sepsis. But if we had somebody paying attention, you know, worst case scenario, they cut off her leg. Best case scenario, they don't cut off her leg. So we were able to get the sores to heal using acupuncture, topical herbs, internal herbs. But dragon blood bomb, evil bone water were like a big part of that to get that flesh to regenerate. And she still has her legs. I didn't fix her diabetes. Her kidneys aren't better necessarily all the way. But, you know, I think that's pretty cool. So that's one thing.
Yeah, and I think that's an example we use in herb class a lot when we talk about those herbs that regenerate flesh, like the Ruxiang Moyao, but also like the Huang Qi and the Dong Guai have some action of regenerating flesh. And I feel like that's
why they're in there.
Yeah, that might be the examples that we use. Like when you say non-healing sores, I think like diabetic sores or like bed sores from sitting in one place. So that just kind of connected two dots in my brain when you said that just now.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of bed sores, I don't see bed sores so much in my clinic, but I do unfortunately see older, overweight people with sores in between their flaps of fat.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's really great in there. Like it's red and sore. I'll give it to them. Next week they come back and it's like all healed. My grandma, she gets really cracked fingertips just from in the wintertime. She gets sort of like a Raynaud's kind of thing. She puts a little bit in there and it like knits in 2 days. And I actually had a patient the other day. So she had colon cancer. And so they completely removed the large intestine. I'll get to the skin, but we know that the large intestine is responsible for the skin.
Yeah.
From a Western perspective, that's where water actually gets absorbed, or the rest of the water gets absorbed before it leaves the body. So in her case, because she literally does not have a large intestine, they did this thing is called a J pouch. We won't go into too much detail, but it's essentially they extend the small intestine, kind of loop it around and attach it to the exit hole. Her skin's really dry and cracking, no matter how much water she drinks. But since I gave her Dragon Blood Bomb, it's like night and day. I mean, her skin's still dry, but there's like no cracks anywhere. And it's in so much better shape. She told me, she came back, she was seeing me like a couple times that week. I applied it in the office and she came back the next day because she had another visit. And she's like, my hands are so much better. I need that stuff.
Oh, awesome. Because I guess normally when I think of topical things, I guess I'd naturally think of more like tendinomuscular arthritis, B syndrome. Mm-hmm. Is that...
For sure.
Is that not in the scope, or is that still something?
No, that isn't. That is in the scope, for sure.
Because I feel like we're still invigorating a lot of blood. Like
exactly.
Like that Ruxiang,
exactly.
Moyao, Shui Jie. That's not just regenerating flesh. It's also invigorating blood.
That's why I thought it's like the most amazing thing to use topically, because you can use it. Like, it doesn't matter. The skin's broken. The tendon's broken. You know, I'll use it for these pulley injuries. People use it on their tennis elbow. I have folks, massaging it into their stiff necks, all sorts of things. Yeah, you just asked about the regenerate flesh option.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's why I mentioned it. I also made, I took the ingredients that I use for Dragon Blood Bomb, and after I soaked them in oil, I also soaked them in alcohol. This was just like a little experiment. And I ended up hurting a joint, like a nerve really badly. So then I was like, oh, let me just try this. And I tried all of the different topicals I had, but until I did that alcohol extract of the same formula, that pain didn't go away. And that one, like once I applied it, it went away in like a day and a half. The other thing is I put really high doses of everything. So like, you know, typically if you see like a jar with oil and stuff in it, there'll be like some herbs at the bottom and it's mostly oil. Like I'll actually show you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like I see a lot of things where like it's a lot of menthol and then just a little bit of other herbs.
Yeah, you see, I mean, it's hard to see because it's really dark, but you can see that. The herbs come up over the top all across.
Yeah.
So this is like 3 liters of oil, and we use like a kilogram of herbs for that approximately. So that's like we kind of stuff it all in there. And we also like we pre-soak it like this. So this is we're pre-soaking in the jojoba. Then we cook it. And then we take the herbs from there and we throw it in the hemp oil. And we let that soak forever, essentially, until we use up the hemp oil. The reason being is that the jojoba oil is pretty stable in heat. So when we cook it, it doesn't get damaged. But the hemp oil is much more heat sensitive. So we don't want to break it down. But hemp oil has a lot of omega-3s and omega-6s. And I don't know what they do from a Chinese medicine perspective, but they're great for your skin.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, it has some nice functions other than that. So we let them soak there, cook there, and soak there. So we try to get as much out of it as possible, and we also agitate regularly. So I just gave away the secret, guys. So, but it's not really a secret formula. We put the ingredients everywhere.
Yeah. Is the extraction different in oil versus alcohol? Because I feel like maybe that's a thing where I guess I usually see like Dongui and Zicao. It's like you would soak in oil or you would toast in oil, whereas like Ruxiang Moyao, I feel like I usually see them like dissolved in alcohol. Is there an extraction when some are better boiled in water? Is there an extraction difference there?
Absolutely. So everyone I talked to couldn't give me a clear answer. So essentially how I chose the herbs that I did include, I just looked at what the traditional herbs used, the ones that appeared most frequently in balms, like topical, like in a gao. I made sure to include that. But we also double up, and a lot of the herbs we include we also use an essential oil as well.
Okay.
So not only are we putting super high doses of raw herbs, we're also putting a lot of essential oils. So, you know, that same ruxiang, that same moyao, that dangui, that baijiu, the like everything, like we try to double up. So we're getting as much as possible in there. And that's why actually like you use a tiny amount and it does a lot. It's super concentrated stuff. The only bad thing about it is that it stains clothing.
Oh, okay. It does have a very beautiful red color, mm-hmm. I have to say.
Just not beautiful if it goes on a white shirt that should be white.
Is there anything like ground up into a powder and just mixed with the oil? Because I'm thinking about like Qing Dai San, Qing Dai Gao. Like I think that's what they usually do with some of those. They just grind it up into a powder and then mix it. And I guess maybe the powder has some sort of reaction.
So in our specific product, not on purpose, but because we do grind our herbs and we use like, what do you call it? We use like a Michelin bag. Some powder does come out. So it ends up being suspended in there, but that's not by design. That's just by like, because it happens that way. But like a really great example, that brings me to my real first experience with topical herbs where it was successful is San Huang Gao. Mm-hmm. So I think this one's useful. Like I know you have a lot of first year students, if you want to go through the ingredients.
Yeah.
Those are... Let's do that thing where you turn to the side and you list everything.
Herbal ice. Like I have to stop and think about it because especially when it's getting this late and I've had this many herbs, that's one we usually call herbal ice. Mm-hmm. And the three huangs are a little bit weird because the first huang is Da Huang and the other two huangs, I can never remember which of the three huangs it is.
Huang Bai for sure.
Yeah, Huang Bai. And then I think it's not Huang Lian. I think it might be Huang Qin.
So yeah, Huang Qin. And sometimes people put like Pu Gong Ying or something else.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes people add in other things and either even other Huangs.
But like you choose Da Huang and two other Huangs.
Jurtze, yeah, yeah.
Jurtze, that's the one that's used there frequently. But the main thing is Da Huang, Huang Bai, and one other Huang. And essentially you grind it up into a powder, fine powder, boil it in melted oil for a little bit and put in beeswax or petroleum jelly, and it's good to go. It's ready to go. Or sometimes people will take those powder herbs and just put it in a raw egg and like make it a paste out of that and then apply that. And so the story is I was living in an apartment with like four other guys, and we were up in Harlem, and this was like my first year of acupuncture school, and I was also doing martial arts, so I was really excited about all these topical things. So I at the time, I had the least money because I was in school, and I lived in the living room, so I just had like paper screens around my bed. So I'm sleeping, and my friend, actually Roman, who we make Dragon Blood Bomb with, he kind of rushes in, and he's like, "Boris, are you sleeping?" I'm like, "Not anymore." He's like, "My friend just got hit by a scooter. Can you fix her? You're a doctor, right?" I'm like, "Dude, I'm a first-year acupuncture student, but let me look." So she had this like big bruise on her hip, and literally that was the only thing I had. So I was like, "Well, she doesn't look like she's dying. Let's put this stuff on her and then see how she does tomorrow." So I made a pulse. I had the pre-prepared. I'd put it on some gauze, put it on there, taped it, and I was like, "All right, good night." I went back to sleep. Next day, she's walking without a limp. There's like the bruise is tiny, and like there's almost no pain. And I was just like, "Wow, this topical stuff works," because it was like a really nasty looking thing, and I was really surprised at the efficacy. And I was like, "Okay, cool." And so that's barely extracted. That's a quick boil, and that's just the powder applied to the skin.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes I've seen people that they just take the powder, mix it with Vaseline, and they say spread it on like cream cheese, and it works. And that one's definitely cold. All those herbs are cold. So I think that one we can definitely say is that the Da Huang is very good at invigorating blood, but all those herbs are cold. So it's definitely for like heat, swelling, heat conditions, acute conditions.
And that's the good thing to think about Da Huang. Actually, if we taste Da Huang compared to Huang Bai, Huang Lian, it has a much more like active flavor. It's not just like cold, bitter, boof. It has like a spiciness to it. It almost reminds me of mustard. So like we can taste that movement in the flavor if we were to taste it. It's actually a nice tasting herb compared to all the other huangs. So like when you apply it, it creates movement. So it's not just the same thing as putting ice. It's much better because there's this invigoration of the blood. So it doesn't cause the long-term stasis issues. So like if we just were to put ice, it just causes vasoconstriction. So nothing good can get in or out and nothing bad can get in or out. So it won't swell, but the body can't heal it.
But that one's not going to have that regenerate flesh stuff in
it.
No. That's just going to be all about like clearing the heat and getting rid of the swelling.
Mm-hmm. But you were mentioning that the Qingdai, so that was, I think...
Oh, yeah. That's another example of a powder.
But frankincense, myrrh, and dragon blood, they're really great just as a powder applied into a wound. And you just leave them in as a matrix, and so the skin would close over it, sort of. But kind of like Yunnan Baiyao or Sanchi. But we don't use it that way because I'm trying to sell it for a more mass market, and it's kind of weird to tell non-TCM folks, like, oh, put this powder in your open cut.
Yeah, and oh, it's totally fine. Your skin will grow over it. Like, that sounds totally fine.
Yeah, it'll get pushed out.
I guess speaking of that, is this easy to explain to your patients, to your general public? Do you have to be like... oh, this is just tiger balm, but better, or how do you explain it?
Well, that's actually a question we get a lot on our Facebook ads. Like, it's like, oh, this is just tiger balm. And we're like, well, no, tiger balm's great, but tiger balm warms things and stops pain. But it doesn't have any of those same blood-moving properties or regenerating flesh properties. It's quite different. For my patients, honestly, they don't really question it. I just tell them, this is going to be good for this condition, and use it X times a day. It's like most people don't need a lot of explanation. If I tell them like this is going to help your heel, like your Achilles tendon to heal, you can apply it there. If you have somewhere else that hurts, you can apply it. Don't eat it, and don't get it on your clothes. with evil bone water, I like put it anywhere it hurts. Don't use it more than 4 times a day in one spot because it can dry your skin, and then don't drink it. You'll probably have a stomachache. So I mean But usually I'm prescribing it. So like when someone comes in, like I treat a lot of ballet dancers. So I just give them the instruction how I want them to use it. And then I don't worry about them misunderstanding it. And then if something else comes up, I'm like, oh, you remember that stuff I gave you? Like, yeah, you can put it there too. And they're like, oh, okay, awesome. And they get excited because they're like, oh, there's a new use for this thing.
And so if people do want to sell that, it's not just available individually. I mean, you can order it individually on your website, so people could always direct people there. But can you like sell it wholesale?
Yeah, we have we've recently simplified our wholesale options. People can buy – we have 3 sizes. We have a small – 4 sizes now, but one of them is not available wholesale. We have small, medium, and large. The small are like little sticks like lip balm, really easy to apply. Medium are like 1/2 ounce tins and large are the 1 ounce tins. And those typically, like, as I said, it's super concentrated. If we're using it only on the hands daily, the 1 ounce tin lasts like 1/2 year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And those are available for wholesale, but you could also order one online. And if you do order it online, make sure you use the link below because,
oh yeah, I'll put a coupon and everything down there.
You get a little coupon and, yeah. So if you have any questions, specifically if this is something that any of the viewers want to incorporate in their clinic or just use for themselves, don't hesitate to email me, boris@dragonbloodbalm.com. I remember some of the early tests, like a big issue we had is that, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, Chinese herbs have flavors and natures and smell and they're exciting, but not everyone likes that. So some of the early versions of it, like we were testing and the feedback we were getting, like, oh, this smells like curry. The current versions don't. But like we were getting a lot of like mixed feedback like that. And somebody would be like, oh, this smells like curry. It's awesome. I want to use this all the time. And somebody else would be like, this is disgusting. I don't want to smell like that. We were giving out samples to like the rock climbing community to see if you get feedback. We sort of fine-tuned the formulas, figured out like, okay, what do we absolutely need to keep? What can we remove? Like one of the things that went by the wayside was chuanxiong. And it's a really good topical herb, but when we removed it, there wasn't much of a loss of function or any noticeable loss of function, but it has a really strong smell, especially the essential oil.
Yeah. Oh, I guess I haven't thought about that with chuanxiong. I was going to say though, sometimes the main thing, I guess with some of those other topicals, like when they use sesame oil, I feel like that's all I smell is the sesame oil.
And the original formula.
Qinghongwan.
Yeah, the original oil had like sesame oil and then chuanxiong and like all these other herbs. And then dangui has like a celery smell. And so like they're like, oh, it smells so savory.
Yeah.
And we found that actually adding in a good amount of, and originally we didn't have menthol because I didn't want it, I found it to be slightly irritating to open skin. And then it wasn't until we started sourcing from the same place that Mark Brinson Evil Bone Water sources from that we're like, oh, okay, this can be really good. And it's actually beneficial. And it also helps to like make it much more pleasant smelling.
Yeah, because I was going to say, is that another one that's like the difference between natural and synthetic?
So
I'm trying to think if that's menthol or if that was just turpentine that I'm still thinking about.
Well, turpentine for sure. So synthetic turpentine is kind of toxic and it's paint thinner. Natural turpentine, I would never drink it, but people have drunk it and reported it to be medicine. But topically, it's fine and it's really lovely and I love the smell. Camphor and menthol also synthetic can be a little bit toxic or questionable at least. The natural stuff just acts a little bit differently. It dissolves a little bit differently. Unfortunately, I don't know enough to give you a better answer, but we stick to the natural stuff because heck, why not?
Yeah. But like empirically, it seems to work.
Yeah. Even though it's like quite a bit more expensive, it just seems to be better. It makes me feel better.
So that's pretty much the end of our conversation about topicals. If you want to try out Dragon Blood Balm or Evil Bone Water, I'll leave a link to where you can order them in the description, along with a coupon code for 15% off your order. And again, you can buy each one separately, or they have a bundle if you want to try Evil Bone Water and Dragon Blood Balm together, like we talked about here. And if you're a practitioner and are interested in selling these products in your clinic, I'll leave links to where you can set up a wholesale account as well. But here, I'll leave you with an epilogue where we talk a little bit more about tasting herbs.
I'm just curious, like, what was your experience tasting herbs, considering that you approached it before as like, that's the thing that my weird friend does?
I thought it was interesting because I guess it's something that I've never really sat and thought about it. Just usually it's like I take a formula and I drink the formula. It's like, ooh, either it's really cinnamony or it's really bitter or sometimes I more think of it as like, I've been taking some formulas and I feel like I can distinguish. It's more like I'm distinguishing the ingredients. Like I'm taking this like, I've been taking some Wendantong. It's like, I can really taste the Jurshur in this one, stuff like that. I've never really thought about it as like, let me sit and think about, is this going to my head or is it sinking downward? So that was kind of interesting. And I think it's just, this might sound kind of weird, but I've never really been into tasting things before. I feel like I don't have a very discriminating palate. And I think it's just something I've done recently. Like I went through a phase where I got really into coffee and I was like doing light roasts and medium roast and different brewing methods.
And like anaerobic and natural.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's like when I changed the water from 180 degrees to brewing with 195 degrees, could I actually taste the difference? Could I taste those when they say, it tastes like cherry and chocolate? Could I
with
actually
oak.
Taste that? Yeah, and that was kind of the first time I thought about that, and that's why I was referencing like when I said it tasted kind of sour. That's something I noticed when I tried comparing some of the really light roast versus the dark roast and some specific types of coffee. I started tasting like, this does taste a little bit sour, and I kind of like that. I wonder if I'm just a very wood person, but I really like that sourness. And so it's only recently that I've done that, but I've actually never done that with herbs. So it is kind of interesting to sit and think that way. Yeah.
So like I started off doing that with Chinese teas. So like I had some language and like paying attention to these things. And then, when I did the herbs, I was like, obviously we should do this with herbs. But yeah, like it's really interesting once you start paying attention how much there is.
Yeah. And I guess I didn't think it's like, I guess maybe I have done that with like, the difference between a Tiquanyin oolong versus an Alishang oolong or a monkey picked oolong. So I guess maybe a little bit in there, but yeah.
I mean, like you mentioned those, and those are like such vastly different experiences for me personally.
Like, I was going to say like the difference between a puar and a green jasmine. It's like that's it's so different,
but I'm glad you have that kind of framework because you can. With tea, it's like actively cultivated in the tea to like, we want this tea to make this person feel this way and have this. With herbs, I feel like it could be, but it's not always.
It's more like we're discovering what's there instead of somebody tried to create. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's really cool because you can discover it, I think. And like visiting the farm and seeing how the things grow and tasting the herbs they just grew compared to the, sometimes like I'll forage for herbs and I'll be like, oh, like I just discovered the other day I have Jammingtza growing next to my house, just like a weed. It's really pretty. I didn't end up harvesting it because I couldn't find instructions. And the thing is with, I don't want to risk poisoning myself because I have a new kid. I have a baby. I don't have time for that. I have a practice. I find it really interesting to like taste and see like, okay, how is that different than that? And like the doujong that I get sometimes, like the doujong I had in class was quite different than this. And like the colors between our two, like what you have and I have, and this was just 3 cups boiled on high heat, 25 minutes, just the same as yours. Like it's kind of different things. And so they're going to probably do different things. Like even just think chemically, it's going to be different if they look and taste different. Anyway, I'd be curious, like after this conversation, if it ends up in any way influencing anything you teach, since you are teaching a lot of first year students.
No, I'll have to think about that. And like, especially because even the class I taught this semester was online. And so it's like, I'm doing a lot of online stuff. And so that was something I really missed about even just teaching this class at PCOM was we couldn't do that herb tasting that I normally do, where it's like, oh, I'm going to sometimes, like I said, bring in these muffins with all 5 flavors, and then we can taste some formulas, and then we can even do like some food therapy, like get some black sesame and walnut with honey sort of thing and taste the different things.
So, and then you'll do shots of Huang Lin Jiuzitang without telling them what it is. It's like, all right, everybody, take a shot of this.
Try it, So I miss that there was that aspect. So I'm trying to think of like how that can be more incorporated. And again, part of it is just to make herbs more exciting, because I feel like teaching herbs is an uphill battle because most people, first of all, it's like, it's not what they signed up for.
Few people say, I went to herbal school.
I think in New York it's optional, or in some of the places it's optional, but in California it's like, in order to be a licensed acupuncturist, there's only one test and it has an herbal portion, so you have to take herbs. And so a lot of people are just like, oh, I just want to do sports medicine, and I don't want to have to do this stuff. And so it's already an uphill battle. It's already difficult because it's a lot of Chinese, it's a lot of pinyin, and it's a lot of just memorizing functions that when you present it in class, it's words on a page. And it's not the same as like an acupuncture class where there's the practical section where you're locating the points or you're drawing the pathways of the channel with mascara or whatever. It's like all you have is words on a page. And so it would be nice to be able to incorporate that, but especially as more and more is going online, I think it's going to be more and more of a challenge to get that across.
Check out that free resource that I mentioned that Julianne did. Cause what she does is 10 to 20 minute videos where she just like brews the herbs, tells you how she brews it, tastes it, and then, you know, invites you to follow along. And I think it's really cool.
Because that sounds really fun.
I think it's a really not unique, but it's like, it's a way to learn herbs that like really makes it like exactly how you're saying, where you can actually interact with them. You have a relationship. And I'm sure there are plenty of people who actually want to learn herbs, but like I've met some folks who have asked me like, I want to learn herbs, but I don't want to learn acupuncture. What can I do? And I'm like, unfortunately, you have to learn acupuncture.
And I mean, you say it's not unique, but I think for like the school experience that most people had, it is unique. Well, I was flabbergasted when I had people who like they got to the intern level and they had never taken herbs. Like that's part of the reason I started doing it in the intro and herbs 1 classes, because a lot of people, I was seeing people in clinic who had never taken herbs any time in their life.
Well, yeah, I guess not unique. I mean, it's not like a new thought, because like literally the forefather Shennong. Of herbs, Shennong is, this is how he learned it. But unfortunately, it's not learned that way now.
Yeah, and I think it would be cool like if you could put together a little kit where like maybe it was just even like the 20 most common herbs. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you get 15 to 20 grams of each herb, and then you can cook them and follow along and taste them and kind of like I don't know, I guess like when you go to a bar and have a beer flight, you could like have an at-home herb flight of the different herbs, but you'd have someone guiding you about what you should be looking for on the taste and stuff like that. I feel like that would be an interesting thing to do.
That could be a fun business, little mini business. I don't know. If you don't run with it, let me know.